case. As you can tell, I'm losing my voice, which just goes, I've been losing my mind all session, so they work together. We have a lot of people scheduled to sign up on both of these bills, but actually the South Slough bills, I think, are shorter, so I'd like to go ahead and start with them and see if we can move through them fairly quickly before we move to Senate Bill 740. So let's open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 91. Jeanette Holman, do you want to come on up? And Doug Smith, do you want to come up too? Senate Bill 91.
Oh, I signed the wrong one. I meant to sign 740.
You know about the South Slough?
I'll take all the help.
Sorry, you signed up on that one. He has to testify on 91.
You got to testify.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I am Jeanette Holman, the Assistant Director for Administration and Finance at the Department of State Lands. Thank you for allowing me this bright and early, well, not so bright and early, opportunity to testify on these bills. Senate Bill 91 would allow the South Slough National Estuarine Research Reserve to establish a system of fees for to help cover certain costs at the reserve. The South Slough Reserve was established in 1974 as the first national estuarine as part of a nationwide estuarine reserve system. The reserve is funded in large part by federal grants with matching funds that are derived from the statutory revenues in the Common School Fund, as well as private grants and donations. The Department of State Lands serves as the agency partnering with NOAA to accomplish the three-pronged mission of the South Slough, which is education, stewardship, and research relating to estuaries and coastal issues. Each year, the South Slough receives more than 25,000 visitors, and at least 5,000 of these are school children who visit the reserve to take advantage of their classrooms and their teaching workshops. In addition, the South Slough Reserve staff conducts lots of research that pertains to coastal issues and that benefit the businesses and coastal communities in Oregon. In 2003, the Legislative Assembly directed the Department of State Lands in a budget note to explore the possibility of implementing a system of fees to cover some of the operational costs at the South Slough. In discussions with an advisory group established to explore funding alternatives, DSL determined that neither the department nor the commission currently has authority to charge fees for activities at the South Slough Reserve. Senate Bill 91 would grant that authority, but it does not establish fees at this time.
What kind of activities are we talking about?
They're talking about the advisory group and generally the consensus we found from people down in the South Slough, Coos Bay, Charleston area was that they did not want admission fees. They felt that this would be detrimental to the school children who come by the busload and would kind of defeat the purpose of trying to eliminate support for this from the Common School Fund. And they were also concerned about the impact on tourism in the area if they had admission fees. But they did find other activities that they do at the South Slough or could do if they could charge for them. We have a newly remodeled visitor center that is beautiful. We've had numerous requests for weddings to be held there, but we don't do it because the cost of providing that would be too much additional cost to incur at this time.
Is that your main one, weddings?
Pardon?
Is that your main activity that you need to charge for?
No, there's other business meetings. The other thing that they do is a lot of guided tours and trips in the slough area that they could recover some of the costs for if they were allowed to charge for them.
Okay. All right. Senator Shields.
Have you
thought of like day retreats for business groups to spend a day?
That's another possibility that's been talked about.
I mean, I know a couple caucuses that would probably like to go have day-long retreats to settle their differences and stuff like that.
That'd be a great idea and a great place to do it. We don't have a fee schedule at this time. It kind of came to a halt when we discovered we didn't have the authority to do anything at that point. So that's single money one. But I would also say that the amendments that you have, the 91-1 amendments, were requested by us at the request of the state treasurer. During the interim, legislative council and the treasurer's office did some refining of some of their language on the treasury statutes, and this reflects that agreement.
Councilor Shields. Just a follow-up comment. I was kind of joking when I said that a retreat for a business or something, then I added the caucus idea, but literally we should have our caucuses, Democrat or Republican, down there and get some local media to point out, hey, here's a retreat center. It might help them out a little.
Probably would. Any questions? Yes, Senator Byron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why the change in Section 2 to go from the common or the general fund to the common school fund?
Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, that change happened in 1997. My recollection of it, and I was not in my current position at that time, was that there was, the legislature was looking for ways to take some of the funding out of the general fund and put it into other funds. Up until then, it had been funded by the general fund.
Sure. You said that change happened in 97, but this bill changes that.
No, this bill does not change where the funding comes from. Right now, the funding comes out of the common school fund.
Yes, but this bill puts the funds in the common school fund instead of the general fund.
This bill, okay. That change is, again, a legislative council. See, I can blame them now that I'm not down there. Legislative Council was cleaning up statutes, and one of the things that they realized was that when the funding mechanism switched from the general fund to the common school fund in 1997, this statute did not get changed. I probably did it. So that just needs to be changed to reflect what's really happening now.
Are you satisfied with that, Senator Byer?
No, really, I'm not. Can you give me the statutory references that, because I mean this bill on page 2, section 2, says that there is a management account in the general fund, and this bill changes it to the common school fund. So where did that happen that wasn't here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, in 1997 when the funding switched to the funding source switched from the general fund to the common school fund, all of our money now comes out of the common school fund. When we go through ways and means, it's appropriate. It's given as an expenditure limitation from the common school fund. But the statute where that account was set up never got changed in the statutes.
I understand that. So currently the money comes from the common school fund, goes into account in the general fund.
It may. It's an account, yes.
And the interest on that account is credited where?
In the common school fund account.
I know where the common school fund money goes, but under this bill, the money is going to an account in the general fund into account in the common school fund, and the interest is going to go to the common school fund. Where does the interest go now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, right now it's an expenditure limitation out of the common school fund. We don't take it out of the common school fund until we need to expend it. So it never gets switched over to that general fund account that is out there.
Generating the interest now.
No, because it's already in the common school fund. and it only gets taken out of there when we spend it.
Okay. Is that the same as the interest is staying in the account, the same account the money is in? I mean, there's no interest moving accounts.
Yeah, there's interest earned on the common school fund generally, but this money isn't transferred right now from that.
I understand now.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Heidi Sickert?
Sorry, I signed the wrong one.
Okay, that's okay. Are there any other witnesses on Senate Bill 91? Okay.
Senator Meyer, are you comfortable with this?
Okay. Let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 91. Open a work session on Senate Bill 91.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments.
Senator Byers moved the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 91. Are there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
Chair, I move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Byers moves Senate Bill 91 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Are there any discussion? My staff says we need to refer this to Ways and Means.
This has got no fiscal impact.
I don't disagree with you. It has a sense more from Ways and Means.
Chair, I would amend my motion to send the bill to Ways and Means.
Well, there's no fiscal.
I will withdraw my motion if you wish.
Yeah, why don't you do that? No, let's send it to the floor and let the Senate President work out there.
Mr. Chair, I would say,
go ahead.
I would move that we send the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation and ask the Senate President to rescind his substantive approval of Ways and Means.
All right. Senator Meyer has so moved. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
I'd be glad to carry it if you want me to.
All right. Senator Shields would carry it. Let's open the public hearing on Senate Bill 92. Jeanette Holman. Are there any other witnesses here on Senate Bill 92? Okay. Just want to make sure you didn't sign up the wrong sheet. Yeah. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Jeanette Holman, Assistant Director for the Department of State Lands. Senate Bill 92 would add a tribal representative to the South Slough National Estuary Research Reserve Management Commission. This bill was drafted in response to Oregon's state tribal relations law, which requires that state agencies cooperate with tribes in the development and implementation of programs of the state agency that affect the tribes. DSL seeks to ensure that the representation of tribal interests on the South Slough Commission. And I'd add that the South Slough Commission is a management commission appointed by the governor that oversees the management of the reserve area.
Okay. Thank you very much. Frankly, this bill is so simple, I don't think we need further testimony.
Okay.
Senator Shields, do you have any questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Sir, what's your name? Is it Mr.
Danny Crossman.
Danny Crossman, would you like to testify, please? And is there a Bailey Payne on this bill? Okay, come on up, please.
I'm not sure if I'm for the right one. Is this for 40?
Take your chances.
No. Sorry about that.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Crossman.
Mr. Chair and committee. I'm Dan Crossman. I'm on the Council for Confederated Tribes of Coos, Siuslaw, and Laurempois. This estuary is right in the middle of our ancestral territory, Coos territory. I have some maps and stuff. I don't know if you guys got all that. If you'd like to have them, I could send them.
Mr. Crossman, I think there's a very good chance we'll pass out this bill in the next 3 minutes.
Okay. Well, then I'll just say that Coos tribes and Siuslaw Laurempois is very supportive of this bill and
okay.
Would like to have a say in helping the estuary.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate your testimony. And frankly, I would like to see the maps because we have that other bill that we're going to be dealing with on the South Slough estuary. So maybe if you could hand them to the committee staff, that would be great.
No problem.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming in this morning. Let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 92, open a work session on Senate Bill 92.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 92 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved Senate Bill 92 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any
just a comment?
Yes.
You know, this is the same exact statute that we just amended with Senate Bill 91, and it's kind of a shame that these two bills weren't combined, because now there's going to be conforming amendments. And this thing gets to the when these things get to the House, it's, I guess, heads up. We'll have to reconcile the two bills that did amend the exact same statute.
Good point.
Probably just made an amendment to that bill and done it all in one.
Oh, well. Should we pass it out anyway?
It's already moved.
Okay. Any objection? All right. So ordered. I'd like to go ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 346. Senator Shields, this is the sturgeon propagation bill that we carried over from yesterday.
346, we're not sturgeon propagation, it's the land use one.
Okay. Yes, I'm sorry, it's the land use one from the fish transportation issues. And we needed to adopt the Dash 1 amendment.
You're doing a work session?
Yes. We're going to a work session on Senate Bill 346.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments in the Senate Bill 346.
Senator Beyer has moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 346. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 346 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved Senate Bill 346 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
And Senator Beyer will carry it. And let's go ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 740. Thanks to everyone for waiting. And let's begin with Representative Dingfelder and Representative Buckley, please. Thanks for your patience in waiting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jackie Dingfelder. I'm state representative for Northeast Portland, House District 45, and I appreciate you hearing this very interesting bill on such an early hour in the morning, but I know you'll be intrigued, especially by the prop here, which was my TV last session, by the way. It's now obsolete. It doesn't work anymore, and we don't know what to do with it, so we thought we'd bring it here and see if we can figure out, which is a good segue into Senate Bill 740. This is a bill to set up an electronic waste recycling program for Oregon. And for several years, I have been actively working on the growing problem of electronic waste in Oregon and what we can do with obsolete TVs such as this. In 2004, an estimated 18 million pounds of electronics became obsolete in Oregon homes and businesses. New electronic products are released every day, creating a backlog of products that require recycling and disposal. And experts estimate that only about 10% of these products are currently recycled. That means that millions of dollars in lost commodities, energy, and resources are wasted, and improper disposal of lead, mercury, and other hazardous materials and electronics pose health risks to people. Knowing that a real solution would require the input of the electronics industry, both manufacturers and processors, state and local government agencies, and recycling advocates, I worked last session with all of these groups to craft Senate Bill 867, which you heard about at the final report that came out of that Electronics Product Stewardship Advisory Committee. And I do have copies of the report, and which you didn't receive last time, so I will give that to staff, along with a fact sheet on the bill. Thank you. So what this committee did, we met for about a year. We had about seven meetings. We developed recommendations for infrastructure for reuse and recycling for electronic products, and you heard last time we looked at three options. We looked at making sure that state efforts were consistent and supportive of national developments. We reviewed existing data on the actual impact that used electronic products have on the environment. We also assessed existing regulations and recommended any needed changes work closely with several agencies, the Department of Environmental Quality and Department of Administrative Services. We developed strategies and recommended incentives for business development related to reuse and recycling of electronic products, developed recommendations for educating consumers and businesses, and assessed procurement guidelines that might be developed or used in Oregon. All of that information is in that report, which you can read at your leisure. So as I mentioned, we met seven times, and the committee came to an agreement on many issues. We had a very robust discussion about what approach to take regarding developing an electronic waste recycling infrastructure for Oregon. There was no agreement among the committee members. However, I decided to move forward with what I thought was the most reasonable approach, and that's embodied in Senate Bill 740. And this is an upfront fee built into the cost of the product. So when you would go purchase a TV such as this, a much updated version, hopefully, or a computer, several pieces of computer equipment, you would pay a fee upfront in the cost of that computer or TV. And that would cover the cost of disposal. That would be administered through the state, through grants, and this would actually be used by private companies or nonprofits or cities and counties to offset the cost of recycling. So why do we need to act? Local governments can't bear the burden of disposing waste, and you're going to hear today from some of those local governments about what it really costs them. Statewide, what we found with the cost for convenience service to the public would range from $2.2 million to $3.1 million per year. In Lane County, which I think Lane County is here today, the cost of between $5 and $20 per item to manage the equipment. It's inefficient and costly for each county to deal with electronic waste at a local scale. A statewide solution will increase efficiency by creating economies of scale for recycling these products. Also, the public wants recycling options for their old electronics. In 2004, Dell Computers held collection days for the public in 17 cities across the United States. The Portland event was in the top five, bringing in 142 tons. So obviously there's a huge need. And calls to the Metro hotline, and you'll hear from Metro today, asking where to recycle electronic equipment, that increased by 15% last year to nearly 6,000 calls. The problem will only get worse unless we act now. As more unused electronics accumulate in homes and as the recycling value declines, the recycling system will cost more and more. And the Oregon backlog of old computers and TVs in storage is projected to grow by over 300,000 units this year, an accumulated cost that is increasing by $4 million a year. If Oregon established convenient recycling opportunities, we conservatively expect to collect over 9 million pounds each year based on data from collection programs elsewhere in the United States. That's a huge amount that's currently either sitting in people's homes or basements or going to a landfill somewhere. We've been studying and talking for 4 years. We know what needs to be done. We know the options. We know what the stakeholders think. It's time to act. This solution, committee members, will not cost taxpayers any more than they're currently paying. This bill brings its own funding. This is a fee to be paid by the consumers up front. This is a private sector solution that does not build more government. This bill makes it possible for private businesses and nonprofits to deliver the necessary services, not government. And this is an Oregon solution that will contribute to a national solution. If and when a national system is established, the Oregon solution will sunset. I'm not going to go into details. You'll hear much more about that today. But I do want to make one note that the legislation in front of you does need amending. We're working on amendments currently, and I'm willing to work with the committee, with committee staff, as we work through these amendments and address some of the issues that you may hear today. I very much appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee? Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Peter Buckley, State Representative, House District 5, Ashland, Talent, Phoenix, Jacksonville, and two precincts in Medford. I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I'll be brief because I know you have a good crowd who wants to also discuss this bill. This bill, in my opinion, is an idea whose time has come. It's a creative and practical solution to a growing problem, and it offers a kind of collaboration between business and government that we consistently seek. My office did some research on just how the disposal and possible recycling of computers and other electronic products works in my home region of Jackson County. At the two major disposal centers in my district, Ashland Sanitary and Rogue Disposal, we were told that they have no program at all at this point. When people dump their garbage, the electronic products simply go in with everything else. If a customer should ask, both facilities refer the customer to American Appliance Recyclers in White City, just outside of Medford. American Appliance Recyclers packages and ships e-waste from parts of Northern California and Southern Oregon to end-of-the-line recyclers located across the nation, but none here in the state of Oregon. 2 points to make here. First, American Appliance Recyclers handled approximately 585 tons of e-waste in 2004. 585 tons just from Southern Oregon and part of Northern California. And second, the end-of-the-line recyclers they ship to are outside of Oregon, sending basically jobs outside of our state. We have a growing number of appliances in our lives every year. Senate Bill 740 faces this fact straight on with a solution that's cost-effective, backed by many members of the electronics industry, and is positive for all of us. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to mention that there was a recycler who could not be here today because he was ill, so I do have his testimony to submit for the record.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair, I do have one question.
Senator Byron.
Thank you. Representative Dingfelder, you said that if a federal program goes into effect, this will be repealed. I'm trying to find out where that is in the bill because I see a 2016 sunset on the entire act, but I didn't see a federal. Where it says a federal act repeals this act.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, there was great discussion in the committee about a preference for a national solution, and I will say up front here that that was the preference of the committee is for a national solution. Now, you will hear today about the national efforts that have been ongoing for many, many years, yet they seem to have stalled and are not moving forward. But there was agreement among the committee that should a national solution be enacted, that Oregon, we wanted to set it up to make sure to be consistent with anything coming down or that we would sunset ours, and if that's not currently in the bill, that's part of what we would add for an amendment. So, and I just want to emphasize that you're going to hear today about a lot of concepts. The concept is this is a solution where Oregon can be a leader. California has already adopted a similar bill, although we think that our proposal is better because it doesn't set up an increase in bureaucracy as California's does, and you'll hear today from some California folks. But it's an Oregon solution. It'll help create jobs, self-sufficiency. We won't be shipping the majority of this stuff out of state. It will help create more recycling jobs here in the state. And also, It shares responsibility between consumers and the manufacturers. This is a shared responsibility bill. So I would be happy to answer more questions later, especially if they come up during the hearing. But we will, as I mentioned, need to provide amendments, and we'll be working on that here very shortly.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Craig, is it? I can't read this from Total Recycle?
Reclaim.
Total Reclaim.
Good morning, Chairman, members of the committee. My name is... it's not Total Reclaim, it's Craig Lorch. I'm with a company called Total Reclaim in Seattle. I'm one of the owners. We are a recycler of appliances. We've been in business since 1991. We recycle something on the order of about 50,000 appliances a year. These are domestic refrigerators. We also have a fluorescent lamp and ballast recycling operation, which is active throughout the Pacific Northwest, and that's named Ecolites Northwest. And since 2000, we've been in the business of recycling computers and electronics equipment. I attended a number of the Oregon e-waste committee meetings. I'm on Washington State's e-waste task force that's going on right now. It was convened by legislation last year. In addition, I was on the statewide mercury task force and the recently completed task force related to flame retardants in plastics in computer plastics that was conducted in Washington. We primarily have have contracts with city and county governments and large generators, so we are a recycler of large quantities of different materials. I'm in support of Senate Bill 740. The volume of the material, the magnitude of the problem is immense. We've only been in the business of taking e-waste since 2000. We went from zero to over 10 million pounds a year in the past year. I mean, and I think we're still only scratching the surface. I mean, some of the numbers that have been put forth as expert testimony, I still think are underreporting, because we're still not getting. I don't believe we're getting 10% of the material, and we're over 10 million pounds a year.
Mr. Lawrence, I mean, I don't know what you figure 10 million pounds means. In terms of a percentage of either volume or weight, do you have a percentage?
I have no clue how much this stuff is sold. I really don't know.
No, I mean, the amount of total waste, how much is e-waste?
As I recall from the from Washington's waste characterizations, it's 1 to 2% of the waste stream.
Okay.
So it's still, I mean, it's a small piece in Washington, but yet it's still an enormous amount. I mean, the volume of waste is such a colossal thing.
Thank you.
We did a single cleanup event last year in Anchorage that brought in more than 400,000 pounds of product. It was 26 trailer loads of material came down from Anchorage from one event. This was a Dell-sponsored event, and we're going to be doing it again this year. But, again, that's out of a state much smaller than Oregon, and that was in a single event. As you're aware, these devices contain potentially hazardous materials such as mercury and lead. Further, they also contain valuable raw materials, steel, aluminum, copper, gold, palladium, other precious metals. To simply throw this stuff in a landfill is wasteful and foolish. So creating a comprehensive financing system and recovering materials is essential, in my view. The bill before you creates that comprehensive financing system to help manage the waste stream. The cost of managing would no longer be borne by local government, would be shifted to the original purchaser of the product, which seems appropriate to me. The bill creates opportunities for private business development and jobs creation in Oregon. The bill also provides a strategy so that nonprofits and other charities are not overwhelmed by this product with no money to pay for the problem. And the bill provides for a mechanism to work towards a national solution should one come around. So I encourage your support of the bill and would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Senator Shields.
In your testimony, you said the cost in Oregon could be as high as $5 million per year. You're saying that actually getting a program up and running could save local governments as much as $5 million a year, you think?
Well, at this point in time, as you just heard, most of the stuff goes in the landfill.
Right.
So if it continues to go in the landfill, no, I suppose the user, the person who puts it in the landfill, pays for the service of it going into the landfill. However, as the cities and counties set up collection programs to divert it from landfills, someone's going to have to pay for it, and it will be borne by the locals. So we'll probably hear from different local government officials here on that.
Well, it still comes out of our pockets if we're filling our landfills quicker. So what I guess I'm driving at is it really would save us money not to fill those landfills so quickly.
Yeah.
You know, it's a fee we pay with our garbage each month, but it's still coming out of our pockets. Yeah. Second question, Mr. Chair. You talk about jobs creation.
Mm-hmm.
I realize that getting some mercury and lead and getting some precious metals and so on might be part of what you were referring to. But this is a dumb question, and I just really want to ask, if we get enough recycled computers, their parts, and so on, are there any business opportunities in, for instance, building what certainly wouldn't be new or state-of-the-art computers, but maybe second-grade computers, you know, that could actually be sold very cheaply and help the poor get into computers? It was absurd. The other day I was in a hearing where they were talking about putting stuff out on the web in Spanish because we don't have income tax forms in anything but English. And I said, yeah, just how many really poor farm workers go home to a computer to look up something on the web? You know, there was a disconnect. And what I'm saying is, if you had a computer that was made of mostly spare parts, could you efficiently, or could it be good done that we could create an industry out of that?
There's a number of small nonprofits in different areas that are doing just exactly what you say. One of them based in Portland is Free Geek, and also Martin is here. I don't know if he's going to be testifying, but they do exactly that. They take in old equipment, they high-grade the material, they refurbish computers, and then distribute them to people who need them, basically people on the other side of the digital divide.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Wayne Reifer?
We can take that check.
Good, thank you. So you can take my TV.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Wayne Reifer, Cedar Mill.
Are you about to be annexed?
That's another bill.
I believe that's another bill, same committee, I surely. Hope not, is my personal opinion. Though there may be some benefits there, too. I am a citizen who's been very actively involved in this issue for a number of years, from 1975 Northwest 113th, and have been involved in helping draft this language and bring this forward to you. I'm going to try to keep my comments very simple, make a few simple points for a lot of people to speak here today. First, Mr. Chairman, Senator Myers, the answer, I believe, to your earlier question of Representative Dingfelder is in Section 12. That's the intended, not sunset, but I guess you would say it would roll over into a national system or one developed. And I have been working nationally with the electronics industry and governments and recyclers and advocates to try to find a national solution. It's tough. This is not an easy problem to solve. It's not a huge problem. Let's be honest. The amount of resources we need are not huge, but that is the problem. We need some resources to solve this problem. You've heard about the rising tide. You've heard about the environmental impacts. I would like to make this from a different perspective, from the perspective of my basement and the basement of many of my fellow Cedar Mill residents. If you walk down the street, over one half of all the households have an old computer or television, not in use, out of use, obsolete, sitting in storage. Back, the number was 53% from a survey that was done in California, and this was 3 years ago, and I'm sure it's getting higher every day. This is a problem that is growing, and it's one that is just not going to kind of solve itself. It needs some intervention, and we've been trying to figure out what the best intervention is, and we believe that we have tried to find that. Not a pretty option. Many of the options really are, you know, absolutely the thing you always wanted to take home and tell your constituents that you did today. You passed a new fee, or you put a mandate on manufacturers. The options are not great. We do believe that this is the best one, and hope that you will take a look at it from that standpoint. The second point I would like to make is, frankly, the incredible opportunity that is being delivered by the process that's been going on around this issue for the last several years. You have quite a substantial number of manufacturers who are coming to you, coming to other states, and saying, we understand. We have a part of this problem. We want to help resolve this problem. We've looked at it, and we do believe, Lord be, this is not what we wanted in the first place, but we do believe that a fee on our products is the best and most equitable and most efficient way to solve this problem. And that's really what it comes down to, is the efficiency of putting a recycling system in place. California is, let's say, a year or so, maybe two ahead in terms of developing a similar solution, not the same as what we have proposed here, but a similar solution. And that is being implemented, in fact, quite effectively. You will hear a lot of criticisms of it. It's still in its very early implementation phase. There are difficulties with it, but it's really putting recycling on the ground for the citizens of California, which really is the purpose of all of this. So, 2 points I would like to make. Senate Bill 740 establishes a modest fee that would help create that infrastructure. We actually believe that in a period of time, or we'll say 10 years, there will no longer be a need for that fee. After the system has been created, the businesses are up and running, the volumes are flowing, there's efficiencies and economies of scale. The old product, all those old console TVs, you know, have all come out of the basements and out of the systems. Those expensive ones have been recycled. We're dealing with the products that are being made today, much easier to recycle. They all will be. The fee will just drop and drop. Needs a mechanism to make sure that it does drop and drop, and this bill does have that. And we believe that it will probably no longer be necessary. We hope to be able to get to that point. The fee that we're talking about, by estimates, between $2 and $8, depending on the product, per product. So that's $2 and $8 on a $500, $1,000, $1,500 product. We don't believe that that is. In fact, manufacturers who are involved in this really do not believe that that is a fee that would discourage buyers, it would send them across state lines, or that sort of thing. It really seems to be a pretty modest thing. And surveys have shown that people do say, yeah, we understand there needs to be a funding source for this. The second point I would like to make, one of the difficult...
Just wrap it up in a couple minutes.
I will, very quickly. One of the difficult aspects of this bill, we're trying to make this a private sector solution. Yes, it could be done with a big government fix. We could raise money, we could put it all in the government coffers, and we could have government spend all that money, and frankly, that is the way that California has gone. We're trying to find another alternative to that approach. We believe the private sector can do it better, and so... That part needs to have some work done on it so it will work well, but that is the intent of those sections. We call that the private third-party organization that's in the bill. That would conclude the main points I would like to make. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Shields.
When you talk about not government, my brain went south on me, I think. It reminded me of some discussions I've had with people that manage the bottle bill for the state of Oregon, and it has some headaches in it. But is there any thought given to the idea of actually making that a deposit kind of thing? You know, $10 or something, and if people actually took it somewhere, they'd get their $10 back. Has anybody ever thought of that?
Yes.
In your discussion?
Yes, deposit has been looked at, and kind of the consensus that we came to in those discussions was that these computers, these TVs, these are things that they're not quite like bottles that you can kind of throw in the garbage. These are things that people are understanding should be recycled, right? And you don't necessarily need to provide that financial incentive to them. You make the collection convenient to them. You promote it well so they understand how to do it, and they will do it. Build it and they will come. Sort of a concept.
Build it and they'll come. Heard that before.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dennis Brown, Jerry Jordan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Dennis Brown, and I serve as Vice President of State Government Relations for the Equipment Leasing Association, ELA, the trade association for the equipment leasing and finance industry. ELA members engage in business-to-business transactions financing equipment and would be fee collectors under this bill, which was drafted on a consumer retail model designed for waste from households.
Where are you from, Mr. Brown?
Oh, I'm sorry. Our association is based in the Washington, D.C. area.
Okay.
In Virginia.
So you flew out from D.C. to testify?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, go ahead. Thank you.
Appreciate the opportunity to do so.
Oh, my pleasure. Welcome to Oregon. Go ahead.
The Equipment Leasing Association has adopted a policy that provides flexibility to work with states within basic principles under which we could endorse and support recycling fee legislation. Senate Bill 740 does not meet the uniformity and simplicity needed for our endorsement because SB 740 takes the most difficult aspects of the California program and intensifies them. But we have met with the sponsor, Representative Dingfelder, and understand one of our concerns regarding vendor collection of fees will be amended into the bill. We assert that recycling fees imposed on consumers should have the following aspects. The first has already been addressed by the sponsor. It's called a voluntary vendor amendment. We understand it will be amended into the bill. We appreciate that, and I'll skip to number two. Statutory uniformity with like equipment subject to fees in other states. Senate Bill 740 varies from the equipment categories covered in the California statute upon which it is modeled, as well as legislation filed in other states, while replicating ambiguities about equipment covered by the fee, which invites state government to mire our industry in the same uncertainties we currently face in California. Number three, just as the statutory designations vary with equipment types elsewhere in Senate Bill 740, the extent to which these terms are interpreted following enactment will produce more hurdles, pitting manufacturers against state bureaucracy, with our equipment lessors caught in the middle, at times unable to determine what equipment is covered by the fee and subject to noncompliance. As an example, in California, certain broad equipment categories, regardless of manufacturer, are subject to the fee, and 3 months after implementation, industry is battling with state government over what equipment is covered. In some cases, they're telling us to send them a picture of the equipment. They look at the equipment and they render a decision as to whether whether or not it's covered. We simply want to be in compliance because we have to collect the fee. Rather than being caught in these skirmishes and having to send pictures into government. Our fourth and final point is that when enacting a recycling fee, Oregon should provide clarity as regards fee collection and payment responsibilities. And my written testimony gets into that quite a bit, which I've already given to staff. It is common for an Oregon-based lessor to purchase equipment for an out-of-state lessee, just as it is common for an out-of-state lessor to purchase equipment for an Oregon-based lessee. Senate Bill 740 establishes circumstances in which an Oregon lessor will face multiple fees from separate states, among the number of problems to be faced and are outlined in our testimony. Perhaps the greatest complexity with the bill is the multi-tiered system, which we believe could result in an almost inexhaustible number of different fee levels. As has been mentioned under the bill, the Department of Environmental Quality will periodically determine if a national program has come on the scene to replace what would be established by the bill. We think it would be better to initiate a multi-state remedy rather than wait for it to occur. Oregon can take a cue from the northeastern states that are banding together for this purpose. The Council of State Governments Eastern Regional Conference has committed to draft model legislation for filing in 10 states in the next legislative session. State legislators there recognize the need for a regionally consistent legislation and ask for help from CSG in formulating it. Oregon can take the leadership position in the Northwest. Thank you for the attention that you've given to my testimony, and I'd like to turn now to an industry member from Portland, Jerry Jordan, Executive Vice President, U.S. Bancorp Equipment Finance.
Thank you very much. Mr. Brown, I just had a question. You mentioned some concerns with the bill. As far as you're concerned, can all of your objections be addressed?
With amendment to the bill?
Yeah.
No. It would require really consultation with other states to get uniformity and consistency, which, as I pointed out, is being done.
In the Northeast?
In the Northeast, and when we met with the sponsor, I strongly encourage the Council of State Governments Western Region might want to do the same.
Well, probably when you're in D.C., it looks like Oregon is next to Idaho, but it seems like a long way from Salem and Portland, Idaho. If we banded together with the state of Washington, I mean, is that the sort of collaboration that you would want to see to support this bill?
Throwing California. They need some help with their program.
Oh, we can't help them. Okay.
But yes, I don't have a number for you, but yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Jordan?
My name's Jerry Jordan. I live in Kaiser, Oregon. As Mr. Brown indicated, I'm Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of U.S. Bancorp Equipment Finance, which is headquartered in Portland. We are an commercial equipment finance company, and as such, when we do equipment leasing, we would fall as a retailer under this law. The industry is somewhat unique in terms of a retail operation in that we don't have inventory. We don't have a back room. We seldom see, feel, or touch the equipment we're actually financing. The equipment is located and costs negotiated by the actual end user. We're a financing mechanism. And based upon the type of financing product a customer would choose to do with us, we would be liable for collection and remittance of the fee in some situations. In other fee situations, the dealer or vendor or manufacturer they acquired the equipment would be responsible. So it varies. As a nationwide company, we find, or with all the legislation going on nationwide, it's very, very challenging to determine which equipment qualifies for what fees on a nationwide basis. We have customers in all 50 states, so that's the administrative burden is the thing that we're dealing with. I concur with a lot of things I've heard today in terms of it's not an Oregon problem. It's a national and international problem. And a bigger program on a national scale does make a whole lot more sense, which would bring in consistency, common equipment, better definitions. We're challenged by, oftentimes, since we don't see, touch, and feel the equipment, the invoices that we receive from vendors are often not descriptive enough to determine whether the equipment does or does not qualify or requires a fee. Our experience with the program in California has been challenging from an administrative standpoint. And that's my testimony.
Thank you very much. Do you you both see that we need to be very careful in how we administer the program?
Oh, yes.
Do you agree that e-waste is a significant problem that we do need to address?
And that's why our testimony does not voice outright opposition to the concept you're discussing this morning, but talks about the need to make it such that those of us in private industry can administer.
Go ahead.
Absolutely. We recognize it as an issue and a problem that needs to be addressed. And we want to play, but we want to be able to understand what the rules are. You know, the devil is in the details.
That's right. From your standpoint, is the reason that it's a problem the volume of the waste, or is it because of the toxic chemicals that are involved, or what is the specific problem?
Neither of those, really. For us, since we finance the equipment, as Jerry said, we never see the equipment before it goes out. We don't have owner's manuals, et cetera. Administration of the fee under the California model is extremely difficult. And 3 months after it started...
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean the problem with the California program. I mean...
But this bill is based on that.
I know, but I was trying to focus in on your view of the problem of e-waste.
Oh.
And I asked whether that problem was more one of the volume of the waste or some of the toxic materials in the waste.
Mm-hmm. All the above.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks very much. Senator Byer, any questions? Okay, thank you. Let's hear from the other side for a second. Jim Craven and Julie Brandis, please. Julie, you're not going to recycle that computer, are you?
I'm just going to let Richard handle it.
There's plenty of people in the room who take it off your hands. Good morning, Mr. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jim Craven representing the American Electronics Association, a national trade association representing computer manufacturers, software manufacturers, and various IT equipment and telecommunications companies. I'm going to skip through real quickly the first couple points in my testimony because I think they've been made. You have a copy of the task force report. I participated in the task force and part of that whole concern. I think it's just to reiterate a couple points about sort of the baseline about what this issue is and why it's important. One of the elements in Senate Bill 867 that established the task force last session was to ask the task force to look at the actual environmental impacts in Oregon of this issue. In other words, what's the characterization of the problem? And there's a couple of statements in my testimony. We did hear from DEQ in response to an earlier question that e-waste accounts for about 0.5% of the solid waste disposed of in Oregon. Now, that waste study is a couple years old. Perhaps it has increased, but it is, you heard earlier, 1-2%. It's certainly within that range in terms of total volume of solid waste. We also learned from DEQ in the task force that 93% of all Oregon solid waste goes to modern line landfills. It is often alleged in the public coverage of this issue that computer monitors contain lead. If they're thrown into landfills, the lead will leach out and poison the groundwater, etc. I mean, that's usually the lead in every story I've ever read on this issue. The National Solid Waste Association commissioned a year-long study of the issue to really say, is that, do we have any evidence of that? And their conclusion was that heavy metal concentrations in leachate and landfill gas are generally far below the limits that have been established to protect human health and the environment. Now, this is not to say that because of these two statements, this isn't an issue that bears addressing. But it is, I think, important to say on the record that the issue that bears addressing is probably not that this is an enormous fraction of our total solid waste or that there's really much evidence at all that it is a looming environmental crisis. The issue is more, it's better to do something with a product than to throw it away, and I think everybody here in the room agrees with that. The task force addressed a lot of other issues, and you've heard testimony on that. And I think you've also heard the chief sponsor say that, you know, Senate Bill 740 is a proposal from a legislator, does not represent anything nearly a consensus recommendation from the task force that we all served upon. And that the task force did, and I think most people in this room believe, that some kind of national framework would be preferable to the old, as you always hear in this building, a hodgepodge of conflicting state rules and regulations and programs. I don't think anybody is excited about 20, 30 states in the next year or two passing things like this, sort of not like this, and having global manufacturers try to adjust to the Oregon situation, the California situation, the Minnesota situation. That is a recipe for chaos, and it is why a lot of people behind me in this room have tried to fashion a national framework on this. Just recently, Senator Ron Wyden introduced a national bill to try to build the nation's recycling infrastructure. And it also directs the EPA administrator to make recommendations about a national landfill ban, an advanced recycling fee, or manufacturer take-back programs. A number of the task force members, some in this room and many people in our industry, are trying to work with Senator Wyden on advancing that approach in Congress.
Just to clarify, Jim, do you support those concepts on a national scale?
I support the continuation of people being at the table to try to structure a national framework. Yes, Mr. Chair, I do.
That might include a recycling program, including some sort of...
That feed. Might include everything on the table.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm trying to understand, if e-waste is such a small component of the solid waste that it's not a problem, I guess to me that moves it in one area. But that's really not consistent with setting up a national solution to it then.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't think I said it's not a problem. I wanted to characterize it as resource conservation is always preferable to throwing things away.
It's a matter of degree.
Whether they're 0.5% of the solid waste or 20%, when you have value in a product like this for either reuse, for school kids, for reclaiming precious metals. It's all that's always preferable to throwing things away, and okay. we don't support, you know, no solution.
Okay.
And what I my next point is that I think one way to look at this is to say it's probably in our minds more of a challenge than a crisis. And I'm not trying to just parse words there. It's if you believe that this is a looming environmental crisis that's poisoning Oregon and threatening our citizens, the immediacy of one course of action leads you in one direction. If you believe that it's better to conserve resources and throw them away, we ought to all work together on finding solutions, then that leads a different down a different path. And that's the only point I'm trying to make in this. It is not a question that industry has not stepped up to address this challenge or consumer concern. Hewlett-Packard is here in the room. You'll hear from other members. You've already heard some of the efforts that Dell Computers has made, huge successful voluntary take-back programs. Hewlett-Packard ran a program nationally last summer with Office Depot across the United States and collected, I think, 10 million pounds of e-waste last summer. Non-governmental, no mandate, free to the end consumer, show up at the Office Depot and drop it off, not just Hewlett-Packard brands, whatever. So you heard about the Dell program. So a lot is going on. So I don't want to position this as certain people want to address the problem and other people want to say there's no problem. It's how you address it really is the issue before you today, not whether people ought to make progress, because I think everybody's dedicated to making progress, and there's a lot of evidence on the ground that progress is being made. There's another new national program on the eBay website called eBay/Rethink, and it's sponsored by a number of my member organizations as well as some of the major environmental organizations. It's a new national attempt to link people who want to maybe resell their computer to somebody online. It has links to all the major donation programs. It has links to your community recycling programs. And that's just up and running the last couple of months, and it's a really exciting new private sector-based, using the best site on earth to connect willing buyers and willing sellers, eBay, to help address the problem. So that's up and running.
Just a couple more minutes, please.
Yeah, I'm just about done. You've heard about California. I think you might hear more, so I'm going to skip over that, only to say that it is a brand-new program. That fee went into effect just January 1st of this year. The bill was originally passed in the fall of 2003 with a timeline that they realized as they started to implement it could not be met. They slipped the date twice, and it's finally up and running. This bill says, I don't see an emergency clause, so this bill would go into effect January of next year, and said the fee should be starting collected by July 1st. I think that's probably quite aggressive, just looking at the California experience. I think finally, the issue of overlaying a point-of-sale tax in Oregon, fee, tax, whatever you call it, at the retail level will be quite difficult in a state that does not have a retail sales tax infrastructure. I mean, we would be asking all the retailers in this state, every Costco, Best Buy, Circuit City, Fred Meyer's, whatever, to overlay a very complex new system of point-of-sale tax when they have no experience doing that. I think there's also questions about out-of-state sales, whether or not Oregon can exert its ability to tax on internet and catalog sellers who sell into the state from out of state. I think that's still an open legal question. I think the issue of how DEQ in this bill is put into in a position of being the tax collector with no experience on how DEQ and how many FTE and staff it's going to take for DEQ to set up this point-of-sale tax and collect the tax from tens of thousands of retailers. So I think there's just a lot of issues. There's also an issue that hasn't been discussed that is embedded in this bill that gives DEQ the right to impose a landfill ban on electronic waste in Oregon without legislative authorization. And they're given that authority once they find that a, quote, sufficient infrastructure exists and that the system is robust. I mean, those are words I can't believe council actually gave them, those words, sufficient and robust. But they are in the bill, and so at some point when DEQ decides the recycling system in Oregon is robust, they can on their own authority impose a landfill ban in Oregon. That's something that hasn't been discussed, but it is embedded in Senate Bill 40. Those are my main issues, Mr. Chair, and appreciate any questions, and thanks for the time.
Julie.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Julie Brandis, representing Associated Oregon Industries and its Retail Council. We are here today in opposition to Senate Bill 740. In recognition of the time, I have 4 points. The last one is the most important. I'm utilizing the crescendo effect today. The legislation that you see today would place a fee on products that are sold in traditional bricks and mortar stores. And it is our opinion, and again, I'm not an attorney, we don't have a staff attorney, but based on decisions that are coming out of California, that the state could collect a fee on items purchased on the Internet. Nothing in this legislation creates nexus for Internet retailers who do not have a presence within the state. Based on it, on the information that I have, the decision of Quill versus North Dakota would come into play. Those of you who have been in the Revenue Committee in past sessions have probably heard a lot about this. In other words, the Commerce Clause would apply and would prohibit Oregon from imposing a fee and collecting from out-of-state retailers who do not have a substantial nexus within the state of Oregon. It puts us at an unfair competitive disadvantage for bricks and mortar stores. A national solution, this is my second point, would obviously be preferable. I've been in this building a long time as a lobbyist, and no, we as lobbyists can utilize this argument to our advantage. And I'm not trying to pass the buck, so to speak, to make some lobbyists busy and rich in Washington, D.C., but simply put, Oregon is a small state with a small population and with no sales tax, and this will create a burden on state government that I'm not sure this fee can absorb and still create an investment in a third-party organization. It does create new government. AOI is very supportive of the DEQ. We believe it is one of the best-run agencies in this state. My brother works at DEQ, and I know how hard he works. DEQ has no staff that can serve as fee collector and enforcer. I personally do not believe you can raise enough money to invest in the DEQ, making them a tax collector and enforcer, and invest in the third-party organization, and have that third-party organization create competitive e-waste programs. My third point, a non-general fund revenue source is not safe from legislative raids. Our members hold the unemployment trust fund sacred. Still, some legislators attempt to raid it nearly every session. We are not comfortable creating another fund that can easily be raided to fund other general fund priorities. My fourth and final point is my last, but as I mentioned, is probably my most important. And I have brought it up at every task force meeting I attended. A third-party organization is not an easy task. Looking around the room this morning, I think Tom Gallagher, Greg Miller, and myself are the only folks who have had a great deal of experience in developing, lobbying, implementing, and most importantly, protecting the funds of a third-party organization. Think about the Energy Trust of Oregon. It took 3 to 5 years to develop the concept, 2 sessions to pass it, 1 year at the PUC to create the contract. I brought it. And every session since it's passed, we have had to face attempts to raid the fund. So we have been lucky because private utilities collect the funds rather than the state. Private utilities collect the funds
just
rather than the
state. Just another minute, please.
I'm done.
I have a lot of people here.
Nope, I'm done. Those are my 4 points.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I appreciate that. Doug Smith and Lorraine Kerwood. I have you both came from more than 100 miles here, so we can get you up here.
Thanks. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Doug Smith. I'm with Sony Electronics. And we are part of a coalition of 11 other companies, Panasonic, Mitsubishi, Hitachi, Sharp, and several more, that have been involved in this issue for quite a while. And we do support the approach of SB 740. Sony, we've been involved in this electronic waste issue since 1990, and we were the first plant in San Diego to recycle the CRT glass, who actually helped develop the market and the technology behind that. We operate recycling plants at our facilities in Pittsburgh, where we return glass to our glass factory, which Sony operates the only CRT glass factory left in the United, actually North America. We have a battery recycling plant in Dothan, Alabama. We have an asset recovery, like a brand name destruction program at one of our refurbishing facilities. And then in San Diego, we have just opened up another recycling facility there for electronic waste. You know, this whole concept is not necessarily, you know, we can talk about the toxics issue all we want, but the idea is to take this television set whose useful life is over, but those raw materials are fine, and those can be taken apart and turned into new high-definition digital TVs, really to satisfy our new consumer needs.
Which raw materials can you get out of that?
We can recycle the plastic, which we've done, and we do. And the Sony TV sets have recycled content from these. The glass clearly can be recycled in the new glass. And then, of course, the real value behind in this is the copper that's used in the circuit boards. And also, I mean, we talk about lead, but lead is a valuable commodity still. It's an expensive metal that you have to buy for whenever you need lead. So the lead certainly can be used from the solder. We have sponsored more than 900 pilot collection events. And we started this in the mid-90s, late 90s, to try to jumpstart an industry, a voluntary program. And what happened is, because, you know, we've had excellent experiences with making money from our recycled scrap electronics. So we took this, our experience, and tried to work with the local communities, especially Minnesota, try to come up with a workable solution. And what we found is that this, what we call partial cost internalization, which is nothing, means nothing more than manufacturers, if you bring your product back to us, we'll recycle it. We have no problem with that. We launched this program and still have it in operation in Minnesota. But the fact is, things don't come back because a shared responsibility program like that, manufacturers are absorbing about 20% of the total cost, which means 80% is an unfunded mandate on your local communities. And those are the people that scream when you say you need to collect and recycle your electronic waste. This is the experience in California, which led us to support the fee model there. We've been involved with the WEPSI, which is a dialogue up here, the NEPSI, and you'll hear during this whole discussion, you'll hear from people that don't think it's a problem, want to do nothing. You'll hear from people that say, this is a problem, but somebody else has to do it. It's their problem. You'll hear about the partial cost internalization, or you'll hear from people that want to provide to support a comprehensive program. The Europeans have a model. The Japan has a model. They all have a legislative backdrop to protect the marketplace for, so you don't have penetration from all your overseas manufacturers, which is a real problem that we face. In Maine, they have a producer responsibility law, and you have about 15% compliance in that state amongst brand names. How does that protect? Obviously, we submitted a plan, as did the rest of our coalition members, but there's maybe upwards of 150 current brand names that haven't submitted plans in Maine. Now, those technically are illegal for retailers to sell those in the state of Maine. That's a problem. That's a problem we face. It's a problem the industry's going to face. California clearly is a comprehensive model, and I know there's problems with implementation and clarity. However, on the ground, the communities are extremely happy. The residents in the state of California are very happy because they all have numerous opportunities to get rid of their old widescreen 300-pound TV sets at really no hassle. We're doing door-to-door collections in Palm Springs.
Just another minute, please.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But it is a fair system. There's going to be a little bit of leakage with any model you adopt. It protects the market. The diversity that you see in the recycling infrastructure, you've got landfills cooperating with hazardous waste facilities, cooperating with local charities, which banned donations 2 years ago, now open arms, taking them in. And another thing, some retailers have weekly collection events now, because they can drive people to the store, it covers them, a little bit of fee covers their cost, and everyone's happy, gets the stuff out of the waste stream. But it truly, there's 31 recyclers operating high standards, 170 collectors working in conjunction with numerous companies. I wouldn't say it's everything's working perfectly, but you know, easily 3 million pounds a month coming in, absolutely working good.
That 3 million pounds a month is in where?
California.
In the state.
It's growing rapidly.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Smith, I really appreciate your testimony. I found it pretty persuasive. Ms. Kerwood.
Greetings, Chair Ringo and the one remaining committee member. My name is Lorraine Kerwood. I am the Executive Director of Computer Reuse and Recycling Center, a volunteer nonprofit organization located in Eugene, Oregon. Our organization supports Senate Bill 740. We support the advanced recycling fee because we believe it's important that as consumers we are responsible for the purchases that we make. We believe it is important for all consumers, individuals, and businesses to understand the impact electronic waste has on our health and our environment. It's estimated that a new manufacturer of the computer that's sitting at your house uses 1.3 tons of raw material. That's including the monitor, the keyboard, the CPU, and the mouse. This raw material, we can rely less on raw material if we actually recycle the resources that we have available to us. If Senate Bill 740 is passed, the monies generated would help organizations such as ours to do the work as well as expand our services in our communities. Moreover, it would help us create jobs in our nonprofit. Lane County residents have shown a strong desire to offer their computers for reuse or for recycling at both our facility, where we offer 33 hours of open donation times, and at Lane County Solid Waste, where we are the reuse contract. Donations to our facility, of course, are tax deductible.
Ms. Kerwood, if you could just wrap it up. I mean, okay. We've got your written testimony.
Well, that's kind of boring. But I, you know, our focus is on reuse, and for us, getting these computers back into the hands of those that don't have access to technology is critical. Craig mentioned, you know, organizations that do this, and we are one of them. We are the only facility in Lane County, the farthest reuse nonprofit that does this is Free Geek in Portland. We take donations from all over Oregon. People actually mail us their equipment so we can put it back in the hands of folks that need it. One computer that's donated through our organizations, we've researched it, a computer placed in a foster home or a elder's home or a community center can affect up to 20 different people. We have binders full of notes and letters from folks that say, thanks for the computer. I'm able to use this to read a resume, contact family members. I was really hoping this wouldn't happen this time. And so for us, this bill would assist not only in creating jobs for our organization. We all volunteer right now, and we're able to support ourselves by selling our waste and selling material in our thrift store, and we are also doing business pickups and make money that way. But this bill would help actually create jobs that would stabilize our organization and grow us even faster than we are. A year ago, we were...
Ms. Kerwood, I have a whole room of people that need to testify. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
There's only so much time.
Well, I hope that you will listen to the nonprofits and their needs along with the businesses.
Okay.
And I thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony and for your the work you do in recycling. I'm focusing on people who checked on this list that they drove more than 100 miles. The others we'll try to get to as well, but let's go to Heidi Sickert. What's that?
For the record, Matt Blevins, Legislative Affairs Director with the Oregon Environmental Council, receives very supportive of this bill, and I just want to turn it over to Heidi Sickert, who's our program director who's working on this issue.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, I'm Heidi Sickert with the Oregon Environmental Council. I'm our Sustainable Economy Program Director. I want to thank Chair and members of the committee for listening to my testimony, which will be very brief. I just wanted to mention that I was also a participant in the statewide Oregon Advisory Committee on this issue. My staff, a business advisory board for our organization, which is made up of CEO and VP level people, and this has consistently been an issue that they have raised that is of concern and that they feel that there's an opportunity to address, which is, I think, the critical piece here. Thus, we are very supportive of SB 740. Given the lack of national leadership, and that really is the key here, I mean, you've heard that from several other folks, but we really see that as being the main focus here, that given the lack of national leadership, that Oregon should take on the opportunity of all the work that's been done to find a solution. There are really three opportunities here. The first is taking advantage of the lost business opportunities. There's the recycling industry jobs. There's the recovery of valuable components and technical inputs for your use. There's also the opportunity to provide a valuable, convenient resource for consumers who are seeking this resource in an ever-increasing amount, as we've heard from Metro's members and all the responses about. I have actually volunteered at one of the voluntary collection programs, and it was amazing the number of people that showed up with stuff that's very old. And I also wanted to say that this is an opportunity to correctly manage and address the concern about the toxics, mercury, lead, cadmium, that despite what you know, we may have heard earlier, that there are health concerns about this, and that the science that is today's science, not from 10, 20 years ago, is saying that smaller and smaller levels of this is of concern, especially to children, and that's why OEC cares about it. So thus, we're supportive of Senate Bill 740, which establishes a market-based solution. We believe that DEQ can manage this because they do manage a tire fee that this legislation was based on, and so we do feel that this has, this has been very well thought out. There's a lot of people who've been working on this, industry, public and private partnerships, and so we really feel that that this is a good step forward. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Let's get some folks from HP. Larry King, Marcy Easium, and Paul Cosgrove. Do you all?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Byer, Paul Cosgrove, representing HP in Oregon. I'll just say one sentence and then introduce the two people to my right. There's probably no one in this room who has actually more on-the-ground recycling experience with IT than HP. Over 17 years, they have recycled 500 million pounds and expect to double that by the year 2007. So I hope they can give you a perspective on why they oppose SB 740.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Marcy Eastham, and I am Northwest Government Affairs Manager for Hewlett-Packard out of Corvallis. We appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today about Senate Bill 740, but we do oppose it. HP has been a major employer in the state of Oregon for nearly 30 years, and we have 4,600 employees in 22 Oregon counties. We were recently honored to receive the Evergreen Award from Region 10 EPA for our outstanding efforts in recycling waste reduction. In our Corvallis facility alone, 87% of all materials that come into the site are recycled. We have specific issues with Senate Bill 740, and I'll go over them very quickly because they have been addressed by several other people. First of all, the advanced fee. Fees mandated at the point of sale are sales taxes imposed on consumers. Oregonians, Representative Dingfelder is correct in saying that Oregonians want opportunities to recycle. The state recycles 40% of materials, which is very high across the nation. But the residents of the state have also said repeatedly that they do not want a sales tax or they don't like additional fees.
Can I just ask a question about that? Is the California program popular among California consumers, or do they say a lot of four-letter words when they go buy their computer and they pay an extra fee?
They don't know about it.
They don't know about it?
No.
It just built into the cost.
The participation rate is very low.
The Board of Equalization, we had a discussion with them recently, and they had anticipated 75,000 permittees that they'd signed up. Currently they have 3,000. So the participation rate with the retailers is very low.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. There's a potential for higher than anticipated costs. California is discovering that they underestimated what the actual costs would be for the program, and that makes me ask the question, is if the amount of the fee does not cover the actual costs, where will the additional funds to finance the program come from? As noted earlier, there are additional burdens on retailers, particularly in a state that does not have a sales tax structure. There's unfair advantage for distance retailers, inequity for manufacturers, and lack of incentives for improvement. HP is actively engaged at the national level, working with individuals such as Senator Wyden to achieve environmental goals at the lowest possible cost, but with a national solution. We believe that this is the best approach for the environment, and it gives manufacturers the flexibility to implement their responsibility in a way that can drive environmental improvements through individual company design for environmental programs. Now I'd like to introduce my associate, Larry King, who's come from Roseville, California, to tell you about our programs.
Where in California?
I'm in the Roseville facility.
Okay. Where's that?
It's near Sacramento.
Okay.
Outside of Sacramento.
All right. Well, thank you for coming this morning.
Yes. For the record, my name is Larry King. Mr. Chairman, committee member, thank you for allowing me to talk. I work in the Roseville facility, which is actually one of two recycling facilities HP has in the United States. HP started recycling in 1987. So we've been in this business a long time, and we've gained a lot of knowledge from that. Earlier, this bill was characterized as a shared responsibility bill. This couldn't be further from that. It actually releases the manufacturer from a lot of their responsibilities. One of the things we've been able to do, because we own our own recycling facility, is communicate back to the designers. And small design changes can have a huge impact. One of the things that we did was we asked them either use Phillips head screws or slotted head screws, but don't use them both in the same piece of equipment. It increases the efficiency of the recycling, and it was no additional cost to the manufacturer. We have worked very hard discouraging our marketing folks from painting plastic. Under an ARF bill, since we're not responsible for the recycling of the material, there is no reason to look at the cost of recycling in the design. I want to mention one other thing about our...
Can I just ask you a question?
Sure.
I heard 90% of what you just said, because
I'm sorry.
Just getting whispered at. No, no, not your problem. So how do you create the incentive then for the manufacturer to take recycling into account and at the same time give the consumer and the retailer an incentive to recycle?
Well, we view it that the recycling, the cost of recycling, is just another cost in the supply chain. Just like our cost of buying the virgin resin or the transportation, the designers need to look at the total cost from design through recycling. If you only look at part of it and ignore the other part, you're not designing the most efficient system.
Okay.
One of our programs that we had recently was the Office Depot program you heard of earlier. And Oregon had 15 Office Depot stores. And I can tell you that it had one of the highest participation rates. What that did was that drove a lot of business into those Office Depot stores. And they were very pleased with the traffic they received. We did 10.5 million pounds. All of this was done with no additional overhead on HP or Office Depot's part. We ran the program with the existing headcount. We did bring in additional workers to process the material, but as far as the overhead was concerned, no additional cost there. This was a success. The success was the result of a business negotiation between two companies that had really strong environmental cultures in their company. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Hang on a second. You came all the way to testify. Might as well get your wisdom a little bit more. You said a lot of interesting things, but it seems to me somewhere in here there is a recycling program that needs to be implemented, and that we can't wait for the federal government.
I agree.
Mr. Chairman, if I may respond, just because I wanted to point out one piece that I think is very helpful. This talks about four existing HP programs that exist without governmental programs, and one of them I just wanted to mention is hardware recycling. HP right now will come to, you can schedule online for them to come pick up any brand of computer. In other words, I think what we're saying is, as Mr. Craven said, this is a challenge. Some companies have already risen to that challenge.
Okay.
And establishing this kind of fee system is certainly unfair to the companies that have risen to that challenge. And this talks about the other kinds of things you can do with a used computer. And again, it doesn't matter which brand.
Okay. Senator Byron.
Thank you. I just want a clarification. We heard someone earlier mention that California is collecting about 3 million pounds a month. Is that, you work down there, is that sound like a logical, real number? Is that the right number?
Well, no reporting has been done yet, so I'm not sure where that number came from. They don't expect to have first numbers until early May.
Just another question for Mr. King and Ms. Easton. I mean, you accept that e-waste is an important public policy issue that we need to address?
Yes, definitely.
Yes, we believe that manufacturers have a solution.
What's that?
And we believe manufacturers have a solution.
Okay. You know, just a comment on your problems with like advanced fees, all those that could apply to the bottle bill. At least in Oregon, we seem to like our bottle bill, but it's not perfect.
Well, the only difference, of course, is with the bottle bill is you do get your deposit back, and you don't with an advanced recovery fee.
That is true. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Rick Winterhalter and Oso Martin.
Chairman Ringo, Senator Beyer. My name is Rick Winterhalter. I'm the legislative chair for the Association of Oregon Recyclers. I will be brief this morning. Our members are over 275 people actively, businesses, nonprofits, and governments actively working, bringing this state its due recognition as one of the leaders in recycling. And SB 740 continues this state's leadership position, we believe, in recycling electronics. I think one of the things that I want to say is that many of our local governments have, and the businesses behind us have partnered for single-day events. You've heard a little bit about those. One of the things that those of us in local government have asked those consumers that have come bringing their equipment, would you be willing, what kinds of things do you want to see happen with electronics? And most of those folks say, we would be more than willing to pay to have some more convenient opportunities here. This is obviously, I think, quite a bit different than a sales tax. And our members are somewhat frustrated by the national efforts being stymied, and I think that's where our state, again, has kind of picked that up and brought forward some of the better parts of those national discussions, and the most notable of those, of course, is allowing the cost of these popularly requested collection programs to be borne by the consumer. And so we do encourage you to pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Martin.
Hi, my name is Oso Martin. I am the founder and the outreach coordinator for Free Geek. We're a nonprofit based in Portland that does computer reuse and recycling. Last year we were able to divert about 400 tons of material. We recovered over 200 tons of that material. And with our program...
Hang on a second. So you saved about 50%. 50% of the weight of
Right. Actually, about 48% we slate for reuse.
I see. And we attempt to reuse it, and as time catches up with that equipment, it'll eventually be recycled if we don't get to it.
Okay. And how many employees do you have?
We have 14 employees right now. We have a program that utilizes the community in a way that increases the recovered value of the material by about 500%. You take computers and we bring them into our program, and with volunteer labor, demanufacture those computers to increase the value of those commodities, and it goes from about 20 cents a pound to about $1 a pound, increasing value just by our volunteers demanufacturing. We are also able to produce high quality refurbished computers that go out into the community to individuals that are working in the program as a way for people without disposable income to get their hands on a computer and low cost internet access. But we also, the excess from the program goes to local nonprofits and to nonprofit organizations around the world. We're sending computers to Bolivia and Africa on a fairly regular basis. And that's a program that is 89% self-funded. We only get 11% of our funding from grants and foundations. And I think that our model shows that Wayne Reifer's point of that as you kind of take this program further down the line and as you get your economies of scale up, it will start to pay for itself. And so we support this bill. We are sort of qualitatively cautious about some of the details about how money is going to be dispersed and all of those things, but I'm confident that those things will be worked out. Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you very much. Appreciate your testifying today. Dale, can't read the last line. Swanson. Okay, Dale, that's right. Dale Swanson, Frank Dick, and oh yeah, Dale Swanson signed up twice. Oh well.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Chairperson Ringo, members of the committee, my name is Dale Swanson. I represent Mashusta Cotabuki Electronics. We manufacture under the Panasonic name. We are located in a factory in Vancouver, Washington, right on the Oregon border. We manufacture digital and analog televisions, and we have about 500 employees at this facility, many of which work in the Oregon area. Based upon our company's extensive experience with electronic product stewardship and recycling in the U.S. and around the world, we have come to understand the systems based on advanced recovery fees, or ARFs, collected at the point of sale provide the most equitable and comprehensive solution to the complex task of collecting and recycling these products. The establishment of an electronic product stewardship account and program managed by a qualified organization represents an innovative approach that will allow manufacturers such as Panasonic to play a positive and active role towards ensuring the success of overall management program. So we are in support of Senate Bill 740. Any questions?
Okay. No. Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. Okay. Randy Tucker and Bob Danko, if you want to give us a final wrap up, that would be fine.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Randy Tucker, Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. I'll just be extremely brief. Metro has been active in the development of solutions to the e-waste problem. We participated in the advisory committee created by the legislature last session. We, as Representative Dingfelder said, we're receiving an increasing number of calls from citizens on our recycling hotline about what to do with this waste stream. We support Senate Bill 740 because it includes several key elements: shared responsibility between manufacturers, distributors, government, consumers, and nonprofits, a sustainable financing mechanism, and convenient and environmentally sound recycling opportunities. We strongly support the bill. It contains the right elements to solve a growing problem, and it has the support of a broad array of constituencies, as you heard today, and we urge your support. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Bob Danko with the Department of Environmental Quality. We want to thank Representative Dinfelder for keeping this issue alive and on the front burner. We strongly support increased reuse and recycling of electronics. On this bill, we are officially neutral. It has a significant fiscal impact, and we look forward to working with the parties to see if we can bring back amendments acceptable to you and the committee.
Okay. Thank you very much, Randy.
Mr. Chair, one last thing. I actually, ironically, had a printer problem. I've got a printer that's destined for some recycling. But if you'd like written testimony that's more extensive, I can provide that later on today.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you. Frank, Dick, did you? Okay. Is there anybody else that wants to testify? We've got a hand up. Come on.
Got another hand up over here.
A couple hands up. Who else wanted? Yeah, come on forward.
These are the guys that signed up in the wrong sheet.
Right. No. I wasn't going to, just because it's just so late that I wasn't going to. The department's kind of ducking in and out. Okay.
Good morning. Thanks for meeting with us this morning. My name is Bailey Peen. I'm the recycling coordinator from Marion County. And although the commissioners didn't have the opportunity to review this bill, I'm here to talk about the cost to our county and what we're projecting our expenses to be for the upcoming fiscal year, which begins in July 2005. You've got a summary of what our expenses are expected to be, so I don't want to read off this list that you have in front of you. But basically, we're looking at approximately $285,000 when you account for the labor costs as well as all the recycling fees. That represents approximately $1 per person in the county. So it's a tremendous expense to the county to support this, to support the electronics recycling program. However, we feel that it's very important to provide this, and we get many, many, many requests from the citizens of Marion County that would like to have this available to them. One final point that I'd like to make is that should this bill pass, it would likely reduce the burden on the county, the financial burden that we're incurring from providing this recycling service, which would thereby free up funds to do other types of recycling programs, to promote reuse, for example, to focus on household hazardous waste collections, to focus on these other programs that also need attention. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Senator Ringo and Senate Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Pete Chisholm. I'm speaking as a citizen. Address is 2459 Monroe Street, Eugene, Oregon. I work for Lane County Waste Management, and it was mentioned earlier, and I'm here to talk as a citizen. The Senate bill is going to the Lane County Board of County Commissioners on Thursday, and then they'll have an opportunity to review that and state their views. But I wanted to share a little bit about our program that we started in Lane County in July of 2004. But before I do that, I wanted to share...
Well, just a couple minutes, please.
Okay. We had five collection events between 1998 and 2003 in which we collected 100 tons of material. Since July 4th, 2004, we have had a weekly collection for recycling electronics, and we've collected 130 tons of material. In my written statement, there is a list of the fees that we do place on those materials, and so far we have spent about $44,000, and we've collected $35,000 in fees, so we are falling a little bit short with the fees that we have in place. So the comment I wanted to make is that maybe the ARF may not be enough, but as Wayne Reif reported out earlier, efficiency and economies of scale will change that slightly. We developed the system because the citizens of Lane County wanted to see it happen, and we took action. Having a system where the state of Oregon reimbursed us for the work that we do, and having a shared responsibility, because currently through our system, our responsibility is local government and consumer, and I think that there needs to be more responsibility at the table to even out our efforts. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members of the committee, Mike Dewey, representing Waste Management. I'll be very brief. We looked at this issue nationally. It is a problem that needs a solution. I would tell you that a national solution is a bit off. It's not going to happen for a while. So we think Oregon needs to take a look at it. We looked at the various approaches. We think the advanced disposal fee is the right way to go. We know the bill needs significant amendments, and we're working with the proponents to bring back something that is streamlined, is more private-orientated than government-orientated. And we look forward to working with you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anybody else want to testify on this bill? All right. Well, let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 740, and the Committee on Senate Environment and Land Use is adjourned.